Now that I've got your attention, can you hear me reasonably well?
The preacher now.
Is this any better? Okay. Yes, I know the Super Bowl's tonight. That has been made aware. And yes, I know the depth of our devotion is not measured by the length of the sermon. That has been expressed to me several times. Sid actually wanted to show the Super Bowl behind me while I'm preaching on the big screen. I know where I stand with Sid. But with apologies to my Sunday morning class, we're going to look at the first chapter of Daniel tonight, and that's the text for the service. And I say with apologies to our class, we just finished in Sunday school class going through the book of Daniel. Some of this is going to seem awful familiar to our Sunday school class. Most of what you're going to hear tonight, somebody said in the class or pointed me to. But the book of Daniel is a really useful book for the everyday practicing Christian. That's true for several reasons. First of all, Daniel is a great example of the accuracy of the Scripture. Can you hear me now? Oh, okay, I heard, that's a yes. Most of Daniel was also recovered in the Dead Sea Scrolls, just found a few decades ago in the Middle East. And the Daniel that we're reading here tonight, just north of Seminole, Oklahoma in 2007, is the exact same Daniel that Jewish people were reading 200 years at least before Christ, obviously more than that. That's one of the good things about Daniel. Another thing about Daniel is it's just dead slap historically accurate. The book is just loaded with all kinds of interesting historical events, and it talks about in this year this happened, in that year that happened. And we can take a history textbook and we can just track. In fact, Daniel is one of those books that historians that don't even agree with the Bible, just historians look at Daniel as a valid primary historical source. It's a text that they use to determine what happened in history. But there are other reasons. There are amazing prophecies in Daniel. Daniel has some incredibly specific prophecies, and then we're told what the prophecies mean, and sure enough, they came true. It talked about the Persian, or the Medo-Persian, the Babylonian, the Greek, and the Roman empires, when they would rise and fall, with great clarity. It even identified Alexander the Great, well before Alexander came. It talked about when Alexander dies, his kingdom would be split up into four other kingdoms. One of them would be led by Epiphanes, who was a big problem to the Jews in the Maccabean revolt. It had all of that with amazing clarity and detail. And we're not left years later to try and figure out, well, what did they... It tells us what the prophecies meant, and we know they came true. Another reason, it's just a great read. For those of us that just like to read, it's a great read. It has chapters of palace intrigue and wonderfully principled stands, and it has miracles of God. It's just an entertaining read. But for tonight's purposes, it is just chock full of some great lessons. Chapter 1 is ideally your audience would be teenagers. And I wish that the teens were here tonight, because it addresses Daniel when he was a teenager. Let's just read the first chapter of Daniel. It's a pretty big stretch, but we'll just read the whole thing. Chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia, and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of the court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach,
to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these 4 young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, so they entered the king's service. And every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. You know, the first thing that we can glean from this, Daniel did the right thing in the face of some tremendous peer pressure. Now, we know that Daniel was in his teens when all of this happened. We could do the math, but we know from the chronology of events, Daniel was very old at the end of the book. We know when these things happened, and he was obviously in his teens. Some writers have said he was 15. I don't know how they get to that specific conclusion. But he was certainly a young man in his teens. And the chapter starts out, it's pretty dark. Jerusalem had just been sacked. Young men from Judah were taken into slavery, stuck into the king's service, which was probably a good thing. These young men were the best of the best. Verse 4 tells us they were handsome, without physical flaw. They had a quick understanding of things, an aptitude to learn all kinds of things. Daniel was obviously talented. But let's look what that young man faced. First, he was in the arms of his powerful enemies. He had been taken away from his lifelong home, transported to a new place. And they were his enemies. They had just sacked his homeland. The Babylonians were smart. They had sophisticated legal codes. They had a sophisticated economy. They had the technology of the age was there. They had the highest standard of living. They're the most powerful country on earth. They were good at government. They were an expanding empire. The Babylonian people welcomed diversity. It was a diverse empire because it was so big. They didn't waste their resources trying to get people to act just like Babylonians and fighting rebellions. Of course, the Babylonian empire was sinful. Babylon was even used in the New Testament as a symbolic reference to sin, prostitution, all kinds of vice and bad things. Babylon did not have a Christian ethic. Daniel was a fish out of water. They even changed his name. Started him on a course of instruction to learn a whole new language, learn new literature, which I think is a euphemism for learning about other religion because the Babylonian literature was steeped in their so-called gods. And to add on to that, the young man had everything at stake. He was at a crossroads. On one hand, in this direction, he had a career, king's service, a career, money, respectability, the things that most of us put some import on. If he failed, I don't know what the kid would have faced. But he had a lot of pressure on him, and he also had peer pressure because he was there with other young men, we know, from his homeland. There wasn't a lot of room for error. So Daniel was given choice food from the king's table, but that, of course, posed a problem. Jews had very strict dietary laws. We know that from Leviticus. It doesn't say it, but it's apparent from the context of Daniel 1. None of his other students slash captive slaves that the Babylonians had taken had objected to the diet that the Babylonians had forced on them, because only Daniel and his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, had this vegetable diet. So Daniel brings it to their attention, first to the chief official. Official says no. Then he approaches the guard, and he talks the guard into letting them just have vegetables. The end of the story is that it worked. It was good for Daniel and his three friends, and they did very well in the king's service. But you know, Daniel didn't just have spiritual courage. He didn't only just stand up in the face of peer pressure and do the right thing. He approached the issue with thought and with resolve. Look very briefly at verse 8. It contains Daniel's first act in the book. Verse 8. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. The very first thing Daniel ever did was make a resolution in his mind. Thought about it, had a plan, and in his mind he resolved what he was going to do with the spiritual conundrum. You know, Gary Snow's caseload would probably drop in half overnight if we all approached our problems and our difficulties the way young Daniel did, to sit down and think it through and first resolve what we're going to do. I have heard 100 times from my father throughout life, prior planning prevents poor performance, the 5 P's. Prior planning prevents poor performance. I think it's a military adage, but you know, that should also be a spiritual adage. I think that a large part of our spiritual problems may come because we don't plan ahead about our spirituality and decide what we're going to do with the challenges that we face. Instead, we just kind of take them as they come. Daniel did not approach it that way. He had a resolution in his mind early on. This is a problem. I'm going to address it. Here's the way to do it. You know, that's a fringe benefit of being a Christian. It's a secular benefit also, but it is a benefit. Chris said something this morning that really made me think when he said, slavery has been a scourge of the world for a long time. And you know who finally did something about it? Christendom. People with a Christian ethic. And he talked about that in other parts of the world. Slavery was a problem long after we had that problem because of a Christian ethic. But you know, there are a lot of other problems around the world that I think they have as a result of not just having some of the basic Christian ethics that we have. Sanctity of a contract, a handshake deal, you keep your word. Don't hurt other people. Have some stability in your life. You know, I really wish that we could all go to Nicaragua and visit our brothers and sisters. If you ever get a chance to go on the Nicaraguan trip and visit your brothers and sisters in Nicaragua, you need to do it. They don't have a street that's named. Where they live, there's not a town name. If you ask somebody how to get there, they can't really tell you. There's no maps. Not much of a postal service. If you call the police, maybe you'll get an answer. Maybe they'll hang up on you. The country has great troubles because it was government by gun barrel for so many decades, plus Marxism, where religion really wasn't tolerated that much. And you can tell there's just something different about that country when you go there. Our brothers and sisters are extraordinary Christians in Nicaragua. They're the most gentle, pleasant, energetic people you could ever want to meet. And going to one of their worship services would just make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. But the country is sick. I don't think they have a culture or a history of Christianity, and it's something that is very useful for us. One of the things that it does, and Daniel had, was the ability to understand and appreciate consequences, identify problems, and deal with it. It's something we teach our children in Bible class with stories just like this. We should also approach our spiritual problems like Daniel did. Have a resolution, identify it, resolve it, and have a plan to address it. But you know, the third way Daniel handled this is something that we should all do. When Daniel had a problem with his superiors, He looked to solve the problem not by making it more burdensome on the superiors, but by making it more burdensome on himself. Daniel's proposition was to just eat vegetable and water for 10 days. Sounds easy. How many teenagers do you know would rather have vegetables and water than pizzas or enchiladas and Cokes? It's hard for a teenager to make that kind of commitment. I don't care. It's hard for me to make that kind of commitment, not just teenagers. You know, that's easier on his employer. They just had to give him vegetables. It takes a whole lot less grain and resources to produce a pound of beef or meat than it does vegetables. That was the easy solution for his employer. Vegetables have always been considered the poor man's food, even in the Bible. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 17 says, "Better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred." Now, I have a confession. I'm something of a fan of Jerry Clower, the Southern comedian. Mr. Clower, in one of his stand-up routines, brought up Proverbs 15:17. This is what Jerry Clower, at the risk of never being allowed to preach again, I'm going to give you some theology by Jerry Clower. King, I'm not going to do the impression, though. I'm going to save you from that. King Solomon said in the Bible, "It's better to eat poke salad and turnip greens and drink branch water out of a gourd dipper and live in a shotgun house and be dirt poor but have godly love in the home than it is to be rich and live in a mansion and eat charbroiled ribeye steaks three times a day, a wash hole in the backyard," I guess it means a swimming pool, "all the money you can spend, big cars, but you're broiling and bickering and arguing and griping all the time." It's in the Bible, in the book of Proverbs. Jerry's right. He says that's his Liberty, Mississippi interpretation of Proverbs 15:17. The vegetables were the poor man's food. They always have been. Daniel opted for the more burdensome way to deal with it. Many times our spiritual problems with other people can be resolved by taking additional burdens on ourselves, not by foisting them on the offending party. You know, Daniel had several options how to deal with this. The first one was what everybody else did. They're telling me to do this. I've got a career, opportunity for advancement. I don't want to offend, bite the hand that feeds me. I'm going to go along and get along. That was one thing he could have done. The second one, he could have rabble-roused a little bit. Say, "Hey, I want kosher food." The conversation would have gone something like this. "Okay, if you want to feed it and respect our traditions and our culture, I can have anything with a completely split hoof, but it can't chew cud, or it has to chew cud. And I can have seafood as long as it has fins and scales. Now, if it has fins but no scales, or scales or no fins, that's out. I'm sorry, you're going to have to get something else. And oh yeah, the meat has to be purified, can't have blood in it." And if we look at Leviticus 14, he would have said, "Yeah, I can have chicken. I can have some fowl, but I can't have," and get this, how Daniel would have had to say this, "I can't have eagle, vulture, black vulture, red kite, black kite." This is really in Leviticus 11. "Red kite, black kite, any raven, horned owl, screech owl, gull, hawk, little owl, cormorant, great owl, white owl, desert owl, osprey, stork, heron, hoopoe," if I'm reading that right, "and the bat." Oh yeah, we can't have anything that died of natural causes or was killed by a predator, but we need to eat kosher food. Well, maybe he could have got away with that. They had a big investment in him. They were feeding him well. They were spending a lot of resources making these very talented young men useful for the Babylonian Empire. But he didn't do that. He simply placed the burden on himself. Said, "The solution is me. Give me poor foods. I will eat them and I'll do better." Daniel approached it with humility and he put the burden on himself, not on others. Daniel, as a 15-year-old, showed maturity and resolve that was far beyond his years. That's one of the benefits of Christianity. Of course, the most important benefit is we have an eternal covenant with God that means we get to go to heaven. And not just for a few years or 3 years like Daniel was in the service, but forever. Daniel had an uncompromising yet a very humble spirit and a dedication to God. He's even listed in the, quote, Faith Hall of Fame, end quote, in Hebrews chapter 11 for his great acts of faith. We always like to extend an invitation to people at the end of these sermons. If you have not entered into that covenant with God that I just described, or if you have had a problem with peer pressure and don't feel like you've lived up to the example of Daniel, or if you would like the prayers of the church, you're welcome to come up now while we stand and sing.